most people, when you live life, it can be where somebody says, hey, you know, oh, look, my 1-year-old is walking. So people will be like, I can't wait to see Jeremiah walk. But in my mind, he gets in his walk and he moves around. That's walking. It may not look like a typical 1-year-old walking, but everything's like redefined in our life based upon that.
Hello, you're listening to The Rare Life. I'm your host, Madeline Cheney. Today, I am thrilled to share a conversation with Anissa, mom to Jeremiah, who is a 5-year-old with a rare syndrome called TK2D. When Jeremiah was a baby, Anissa was told that he had 3 months to live. In this episode, Anissa shares what it was like to receive this gutting news and how she takes one moment at a time. She also shares some really great nuggets of perspective and wisdom, and the ways that her older sons step in to help care for Jeremiah and even for her. One care that Jeremiah requires is feeding, just like any child. And just like most of our children, it's done in a way unique to the majority, through a feeding tube. When Kimball was tube-fed, I had the privilege of feeding him my pumped breast milk, at least for a few months. I remember how contrasted that felt, to give him something so natural and full of wholesome goodness in a very medical setting in what felt like a very medical way. And that type of nutrition can continue for our children's whole lives. I'm sure many of you have heard of what's referred to as a blenderized diet for tube-fed people, which basically means they're eating the type of food that you or I eat, but put through the blender to turn it into the consistency that can be put through the feeding tube. So they're getting all these great nutrients and health benefits from that real food. And as amazing as it can be to make that blenderized food yourself, there is a great option for those of us with really limited bandwidth emotionally and or physically. And that is a product made by Functional Formularies. They create blends that go into a shelf-stable pouch so that very minimal effort is required for your child to access the benefits of having real food. In their pediatric formula, aptly named Nourish, they went above and beyond to pack in as many healthful benefits as possible. It has 14 carefully selected ingredients, each one chosen for a specific health benefit, is free of the top 8 allergens, and it has no artificial ingredients or sugar. Each ingredient is also plant-based and organic. So I tell you, these kids are eating so much better than probably most of us listening today, including myself. It is fantastic, especially for kiddos like ours that need every boost in health that they can get. Yes, okay, this sounds great, you may say, but we've got to stay on formula that's covered by insurance. Well, good news. With a little advocating, there is a very high success rate in getting Functional Formula covered. They even have a team member dedicated to help you jump through the necessary hoops. If you want to try out a free sample first to make sure your child can tolerate it and loves it, and that you love it, you just need to get your child's GI doctor or dietitian to request a free sample from Functional Formularies. They can do that by going on the website functionalformularies.com. A generous donation from Functional Formularies covered all the costs associated with making today's episode. So a huge, huge thank you to them for their generosity and continued support of The Rare Life. We love you guys. You can learn more about them on their website, functionalformularies.com, which is also linked in the show notes. Okay, a little more about Anissa, and then we'll jump right in. Anissa lives with her 4 sons in South Carolina. She spends her time caring for Jeremiah and also shares his life on social media and YouTube as a way to help other families have hope and feel less alone. Anissa is a lover of her children and of serving and volunteering. Let's jump in. Hi, Anissa. Welcome to the show. It's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's such an honor. Yes, Jeremiah is joining us, which is so awesome, so appropriate for today's episode. He is such a cute guy. I would love to start off with the day that you found out that anything was different about Jeremiah and his development.
Well, Jeremiah, especially because his onset wasn't at birth. A lot of the times with rare diseases, in particular, him having a mitochondrial disease, it's not to say they're born and you can physically see something wrong. With him, he was about 4 or 5 months old, and I felt like his breathing was labored. He was getting tired all the time, and he could no longer lift his head. So I noticed that his body started getting floppy, and things that he could have done in the past, he couldn't do anymore. He was about 4 or 5 months old.
Did you end up bringing him to the doctors or like your pediatrician? Was that something you kind of sat on for a while? Like, oh, this is weird. I'm going to like kind of wait and watch this.
So one of the unfortunate things about mitochondrial diseases and even rare diseases in particular is that as a parent, you often have to prove that something is wrong, because with a rare disease, it's not familiar to others. So they're going to miss the signs. So I first mentioned it to his pediatrician, and they said that Jeremiah was fine and he was just being lazy. I started recording him to prove that he was regressing in terms of his physical abilities. From that, I was able to get a physical therapy referral. That took a little while. While waiting on the referral, then he was breastfed and he started aspirating. Or I felt like if he just wasn't getting enough milk. So I thought it was maybe a feeding problem. So I started putting it in a bottle, and it still wasn't working out. During that time, when I finally got the physical therapy referral, they were like, no, this isn't just him being lazy. It was mentioned that possibly he had torticollis. His doctor mentioned that. That's just basically where sometimes being in the womb for a long time, their neck might just be like a little bit stiff. And through physical therapy activities, you can help them adjust it. And so the physical therapist, Miss Jessica, he saw her today. She was like, no, you need to actually ask for genetic testing, or you need to ask for neurologist. So I went back to the doctor's office and I said, hey, as expected, something's like seriously wrong. And I'd like to request that you send out more referrals for us. It was about 2 or 3 weeks. I didn't hear anything at all. And so Jeremiah just didn't look well one day. He just was just laying there. So I was getting ready to pack up my car and drive to Duke, which is about 4 hours away, because I've always heard really awesome things about Duke. And that night before, I remember being frustrated that nobody called me back. So I went online and found all the nearby genetic testing centers, and I filled out the contactless form. And I was like, hey, I'm really trying to get my son to be seen. The doctor sent a referral. Well, that morning, before I can get in the car, Greenwood Genetic called me and said, basically, the doctor sent over my file, but put the wrong parent information. So nobody was able to contact us. But through me reaching out, they were like, oh, there goes mom. So I called back the doctor's office, furious, asking where did they send the other referrals so I can call them myself, since clearly they sent the wrong information. It's not like a, hey, you call and you get to see somebody tomorrow. But we were lucky enough to get an appointment through somebody's cancellation. So one thing about this journey is that any progressive disease is time sensitive. And with Jeremiah's disease, TK2D, the earlier the onset, the more severe the decline is. So even though we had to wait on stuff, we didn't know that it was also a rush against time. So I remember getting some blood samples done. Our first appointment, they were unable to find anything physically other than his floppiness. So there were no markers for any other diseases that were more known compared to his current disease. After that, we had lots of like blood work and screening done. At first it was said it would take 8 to 10 weeks to get the results back. However, there was a doctor by the name of Dr. Louis who happened to be working on it the following weekend. And once they realized the disease, they called me in that Monday. Wow. I didn't have anybody to go with me. I didn't know what I was walking into to get the results. And when I got there, I remember getting handed a sheet of paper, and I was taking notes as quickly as I can in my phone. And I still actually have the note in my phone because I don't have a medical background. I went to school. I have my master's degree in business, certified grant writer. Like, I'm always more communication or business oriented. Anything to do. My mother was a nurse. I remember going to work with her one day, and she was taking blood from someone, and I passed out.
Oh, Like, not for me.
Yeah, that's my medical experience. Yeah. I hated biology, chemistry, anything to do with anything other than business. Just wasn't a fan. So I started taking notes because I didn't understand anything at all. And then they basically let me know there was no treatment or no cure. I remember that day. So the doctor's office, most hospitals, the glass is super thick, protective reasons. But there was a blackbird that just kept trying to fly into the window. It was pretty eerie. I'll never forget that day whatsoever at all because it was a life-changing day for me. I cried for 3 days and three nights, not knowing, like, they just kind of wanted me to connect with support groups. And then after crying, then I had the appointment with the neurologist, and they pretty much said, we can make his decline comfortable. You're looking at about 3 months left of life.
Wow.
And it was tough, but I started Googling, and thanks to big G, which is God, and little G Google, I was able to find a clinical trial. And at first we had to pay for meds. So we raised funds, we traveled across the country, legal purposes. I just can't say certain locations because he is in a clinical trial and you have confidential agreements with that. But in the end, he got accepted into the clinical trial, which is groundbreaking because here we are 5 years later. And instead of him going backwards, now he can sit up. He's starting to make noises.
Oh my gosh.
So just being able to see, even though it's slow progress, it's some progress.
Right. Like if you have a progressive disease, to see him going the opposite direction is, I just imagine that, like, the milestones he hits, they probably feel so victorious to you. Like, just, you can savor them in a way that no other parent can, right? When you see it that way.
Correct. You learn to redefine what milestones even look like. So, you know, most people, when you live life, it can be where somebody says, hey, you know, oh, look, my 1-year-old is walking. So people will be like, I can't wait to see Jeremiah walk. But in my mind, he gets in his walk and he moves around. That's walking. It may not look like a typical 1-year-old walking, but everything's like redefined in our life based upon that.
Yeah.
One of the things about mitochondrial diseases is that, of course, with him, his respiratory system is definitely the weakest. That's why he's on a ventilator. And recently, the start of the year, he was in hospital with the flu. Bugs are just, it's life-threatening for our kiddos. And whenever something happens, it sets them back a little bit. So things he was doing before he went in the hospital, whenever you have either like a mito crash or you have some type of sickness that goes on, you do see some regression and it takes a while to get back. It's like running a race and having to slow down and maybe like pause. Sometimes you got to take a few steps backwards, but being able to see any sign of progress is always going to be the hope or the silver lining of the entire dark cloud of what we go through on a daily basis.
Yeah. And that makes me think too that, like, if I were you, I feel like I would associate any kind of milestone progress that he's making, like even like little things like vocalizing or moving in any way, I would associate that with like a chance at him living longer, right? Like you would associate them with like a longer life. Is that how it feels for you?
Not only a longer life, but you want to think about quality of life. Because a lot of times, even though they're there, you may not sense certain things about their personality. Jeremiah is super spunky. I mean, just Mr. Big Personality. So I focus more on quality of life in comparison to his actual lifespan. He's definitely surpassed his life expectancy. So now it's more just about being able to provide quality life.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I wonder too, like, with having three older brothers, it's just really tricky to keep germs. I mean, even if you don't have any siblings, it's hard to keep germs at bay. So, like, is that something too, like, when you're talking about quality of life, obviously them going to the hospital and having to, like, be sick there is, like, less ideal as far as that goes. How do you feel about figuring out that balance?
So I was on a call earlier today where I was the guest speaker for a rare disease panel, and I try to explain to them sometimes it's not necessarily a balance. It's kind of like just showing up for whatever today will bring. We don't know what today will bring. So it's hard for me to plan any type of balance. I don't know if when I wake up tomorrow, what Jeremiah is going to be feeling like. what level of care I have to provide. So I just show up when I can, where I can, and try to do everything to the best of my ability for all of my kids. Mm. Hospital trips are actually like a vacation for me. Mm. And it might sound kind of weird. No, I still actually provide all of his care in the hospital. I'm one of those parents who I'm super hands-on. But it's a vacation because when I get there, I'm comfortable and I know everybody.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I know them all. When the environmental workers come in to take the trash out or to mop the floor, they usually write their name on a piece of paper and they might fold it in a special way. That reminds me of when you go on a cruise ship. They always fold the cute little towels and stuff. So I take certain moments and make it feel better or put a spin on it. Or like I mentioned earlier, you have to redefine certain things in order to find a so-called balance. So instead of being depressed in the hospital, I know that the nurses around me are competent. And so I'm at ease if he's not doing well, that they'll be able to provide the level of care that he needs. So vacation, meaning I'm comfortable. And it just feels like a second home for me. My kids, they're usually with my ex-husband or with grandma. And, you know, they're well taken care of. When we're home, we attend. My kids are very active in different sports.
Yeah.
Jeremiah also does Miracle League baseball. We do summer camp. So we try to stay active. And like I referenced before, it's about quality life, which includes experiences, not just individually, but also as a family. Yeah. So showing up to baseball games, track and field meets, football games. Like sometimes it's hard to show up all the time because with the ventilator and limited help, I can't go out when it's raining. I don't have a carport, so I can't safely get into the car.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremiah is 41 pounds now. I'm 135 pounds. I'm petite. He's tall now. So it's a lot of physical constraints. Mm. So I show up when I can to the best of my ability. And I'm so thankful that my boys, even though I have a sense of mom guilt a lot of times, I'm so thankful that they understand.
Yeah.
And they don't hold it against me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so tricky to balance that. Or like you say, it's not even necessarily a balance, but like taking it day by day. I think that's really good advice for people who especially are like earlier on. One day at a time is really all you can do. Because if you get too wrapped up in the future or like planning things out, I think that can just end up being kind of depressing and frustrating because you really don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. You just never know. Like, it's just so unpredictable.
Well, just to kind of edit what you just said, sometimes one day is too much. So I recommend one moment at a time.
Yeah.
With having a mitochondrial disease, he can be perky. Like he's talkative right now. But this morning on my first call, he was laying in my arms. So you really honestly have to do one moment at a time because one day, 24 hours. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That is just way too much.
Yeah. I love that. Like breaking it down even more than that.
Yes.
And you have such a good attitude about all of this. Like, did you always feel this way, like ever since he was diagnosed, or has this been like a process to get to this point?
It is more of an intentional decision. So even moments where I feel like crying, no matter the day, that's why it's easier to break down moments compared to a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the 24 hours, I may have 23 hours that might be heartbreaking, but I might be able to combine time from different hours that can just add up to 1 hour and be okay. So no matter what, at the end of the day, and because of my faith, I know that God is good. So every day is good because he created the days. I do have a lot of times where I isolate myself because I have so much going on and so much to keep up with. So being able to intentionally take a more positive approach to stuff helps the journey. It makes me feel better if I could encourage someone else to redefine their own situation and to just find the good in it.
Yeah. Do you find healing and empowerment in like the different like advocacy roles you take? Like you mentioned before we got on that like you have had like several speaking engagements today. Like, do you find that helps you in some way?
It does because it allows me to take what we may see as a bad situation and turn it into good. So they always say that things turn around based upon God's will, based upon God's favor, based upon his plan. So I think about this journey as a seed, and I always share this. There's a fellow advocate, Andy, at UMDF, and he shared at a recent symposium that we attended. And basically, when you think about a seed and you're going to plant a seed, the thing about advocacy is that you're not just planting the seed for you or your child, because as we know, when it comes down to clinical trials and treatments, it takes forever to get stuff approved and to get the research takes time in essence. So it's like you're planting a seed for future generations so that you make a difference. You may not get to sit under the shade of the tree, but you know that generations down the road, like, you did something meaningful. So, as I mentioned earlier, one of my favorite things in life is being able to serve. So, by serving and volunteering, I get to provide shade for somebody in the future who will probably sit under that tree.
That is so admirable. And I've often thought of people like you that have planted that seed and that I'm provided with shade because of the trees. Not only in like the cure isn't quite as like applicable to our situation in particular, but just things like, wow, this is like a fantastic resource for us as a family to be able to like use, and just different things that have like laws that have changed and more inclusive atmospheres for my son. And so things like that, I just feel so much gratitude for people like you that have gone before and thought of me, of, you know, families that come after them. How does that make you feel about yourself? What is your self-view because of the work that you've done in that regard and the way that you've selflessly done that?
I don't really think about self. Throughout this journey, I have lost yet found myself, if that makes sense. I don't really like my face on anything. I don't really like my name on anything. I'm Jeremiah's mom. I'm my boy's mom. I don't think about myself. I often feel like I'm not doing enough. And I think sometimes I record a lot during the day to make sure that I didn't miss anything. So on Facebook, I share at least 7 to 10 minutes of his life combined. So I record all throughout the day. And at nighttime, I put it all together and I post it on Facebook with a recap. It gets posted on YouTube as well. And I always end with a prayer. And the way that the prayer links, I kind of use words, maybe let's just say if he was playing on a ball or something during the day. So part of the prayer might be like the ability to bounce back. So I just reference everything back to God because I know without him I couldn't do anything. So I never really look at self because that's honestly a tough thing for me to do because I personally feel like I'm never doing enough.
Well, from my point of view, I'm just so amazed by you. I'm like, man, she must think, not in like a selfish way, but like she must be so confident because of all this work that she's doing for others. But I think that is also very admirable that like you're not doing it so you can feel better about yourself. You're doing it just from the love of your heart, like to help others. You say that you share a lot of your life on social media, on YouTube. Like, what is your hope for that?
My hope is that even when I'm gone, that somebody can look back and find courage, find an answer that they need, or just be able to have hope so that no matter what comes your way, you're able to find something good in it. So when I share Jeremiah's journey, I don't only show the good parts, I show the really tough parts so that they could understand and appreciate the journey. I'm not big on TikTok because a lot of it feels rehearsed to me. And with our life, everything's unscripted. I just record as it comes to me. Yeah, I might like cut out little things in order to make it a certain time for social media. But other than that, it's just our unscripted everyday life. I think that sharing and being able to give is like a testimony, it's like an everyday testimony. And so by sharing that, you're able to help others overcome whatever they may go through. So it's like documenting. So just the same way that if we needed answers for something, that we can go back and Google something, I am proud to say that if you go in and Google TK2D, you will find so much stuff on Jeremiah. And that makes a rare disease a little bit more identifiable. Because the next parent, when I first searched for it, I couldn't really find anything on it. However, I also serve as an ambassador for the United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation. So when a child is diagnosed with a disease, they get connected to me. I connect them to a group that we have with parents all across the world. And so we're able to have a community. With a community, there's strength in numbers, but you also get to reach out and say, hey, what can I do for XYZ? And it helps to know that somebody else is going through something similar. Mm-hmm. So being able to make a mark on Google, and it gives somebody a little bit more hope, because now that they Google it and they see a positive video of Jeremiah, it's like, oh, wow, hey, look at this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like the missing part of medical research. It's like they hand you that paper. I mean, I don't know how much information they were able to give you when you first got the diagnosis. But like for us, they handed us like a couple of research papers. And that was it. And I was like, well, I want to see the families. Like, where are the people living with this, right? That's what you really want. And so I think that that's so great. It's like you're adding that, because we had people like you. I mean, they didn't document quite as much, but like I had some families I was able to find. And I was like, okay, I can see this child with it and he's 7 years old, and I can picture Kimball in 7 years. Whereas if you're just looking at just the data you have, like it's just so hard to envision what life might be like.
Correct. Data can be the scariest thing ever. One thing that I like to tell people, even though doctors say one thing, when you're rare, you never know what can happen. You know, data is just from the past, not the future. Sure, we can do, you know, possibility curves and they can predict different things, but it's never with 100% accuracy. So live and try to do the best you can, knowing that even if it's a 0.0001% chance, might as well go for it.
Yeah. When you first found out Jeremiah's diagnosis, when he was just a few months old and they said he had 3 months left, right? Did you have that hope, that glimmer of like, okay, maybe that won't be true for us? Or at that point, did you trust that data and that research? Like, okay, this is set in stone. Like, this is what's going to happen for us.
Trust is an interesting word that you mentioned, because I do believe that our emotions take away trust. So emotions lead you more into a desperate state. And when you're desperate, you don't trust. When you're desperate, you go with whatever's placed in front of you. So if you're in a situation where they give you basically a death diagnosis, the emotions that come with it, in your mind isn't able to process things in a true or false way. It's just like, hey, this is laid on top of you. You really can't breathe. You can't think. So it's not that you trust what they're saying. It just overwhelms you at that point in time. And I think that's what the diagnosis did me, because I literally cried for 3 days and three nights straight before I could come up for air.
Yeah.
And so I can't say that I trusted the whole 3 months thing, because I was still searching. So as long as you're still searching, that's the 0.0001% compared to 100%. So yeah, I don't want to say that I trusted the 3 months. The only thing that I trust in life is God. The only thing.
I love that. That's so profound. I'm like, you're so right. There isn't a lot of conscientious like choice or logic at that point. I mean, that's such a traumatic thing for someone to tell you. And so I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, at that point, when you say you came up for air, what did you do? Like, what did that look like coming up for air after finding something out like that?
Google, Facebook, just try to do as much research and try to find out as much as I can about it, so that even if it was 3 months, it would have been the best 3 months ever for him.
Yeah.
So it wasn't about trusting the timeline. It was about figuring out how can I make sure that he's okay?
Yeah. Yeah. And like you say, like it always went back to quality of life.
Correct.
And I think that's an interesting lesson that so many of us learn when you have a child, you know, that has a shortened life expectancy, whatever that looks like, or an unknown life expectancy, all of a sudden quality of life becomes so much more important than it used to be, or that it is for most people. I don't think people really think about that very much. But when you're dealing with less time, I think then all of a sudden every minute you have with them is so precious.
It is. Quality of life isn't about, it isn't about material things, or, you know, when people say they're living their best life, most of the time they're associated with something material or flashy or going here and doing that. For me, it's just about experiences. It's about going to see the ocean. It's about looking out at the moon and the stars. It's about taking him around other kids so that he can play, so that he can experience social skills and emotions. It's about laying hand cuddling and feeling heart to heart. It's just so much more.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me because it's like people who seem like they can, in quotes, have it all, which is usually like in material ways, like you say, they don't necessarily get to experience that same like depth of emotion that we often have when it's something like this, like that's really hard and you would never ask for, but you just learn lessons that you don't get any other way, I guess.
Correct. Life is the best teacher. Mm-hmm. Life and experience is the best teacher.
Yeah. I mean, you're so wise. You're full of advice. What's one of the best pieces of advice that someone has given you pertaining to everything with Jeremiah?
Honestly, the best advice, it would be two things. One isn't necessarily advice, and that would be simply letting me know that I'm a good mom and that I'm doing the right thing. I think there's a sense of guilt when you have a child with a disease, especially even a genetic one, because it came from you. But it's not like you can go inside and change your own genes.
Yeah.
So even though I'm not good with compliments and stuff, and I always feel like I'm not doing enough, being able to hear that I'm a good mom, even if I don't respond to it because I don't know how to, it helps. Yeah. And the next piece of advice would be to just take some time out for you, because we get lost in this journey of caregiving and trying to make sure that everybody's okay. We never have time for us, and especially with our kids who may have a lot of medical complexities, because we're the expert on it, oftentimes it's hard to like leave somebody else to watch them for too long. So I've never been too far away from Jeremiah. Probably maybe just 2.5 hours away was the furthest I've been. And I was ready to get back home to him. So I have separation anxiety.
Yeah.
Because I'm always thinking about, well, what's he doing? Is he doing this? Is he doing that? I hope he's okay. Even though my support system here, my nurse, when she can work, she's amazing. Taniqua, Zadia, Victoria, like I even have a respiratory therapist who lives 2 streets over. Oh. And they provide competent and compassionate care for Jeremiah, like as if they're his mom themselves.
Oh, what a dream. That's amazing. Yes. Not everyone can say that.
I wish I could see them more often. You know, I see scary stories of nurses and this and that, and I'm just thankful that I feel like they're just appointed by God for our journey. But I do have separation anxiety. So what I do now intentionally, example, if my nurse can work in the morning, she just messaged me and said her son is having some stomach issues. But if she comes in the morning, she'll probably come from 8:30 to 1:30. If Jeremiah is still asleep, I will be dressed by 8:30 and I will leave the house at 8:30. Hmm. And I will probably go for a walk, even if it's just to walk around the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I will try to get a pedicure, and I have to take time out for me just to breathe outside of the house.
Yeah.
Because if not, we sit in the house most of the time unless we have an appointment. So being able to just be by myself, if it's me sitting down at a restaurant, just people watching, it allows me to leave my isolated yet public, because it's socially public, mm-hmm. but to leave my isolated life and to be just part of society again.
Yeah. I think it just feels like you go back to being human, right? You're like, okay, I'm just like a part of this community. I'm like out in the grocery store. No one knows who I am and I don't know them. And I can just like be here by myself out.
Correct.
And do you feel like, because you mentioned you try to leave like before your son wakes up, does that help with your separation anxiety?
No, only because if he's up, I have to provide care. So when Jeremiah wakes up, I have so much to do that it's hard for me to even pause and take a shower.
Oh, gotcha.
With him being more active now, he can pull his ventilator off. He can pull out his G-tube. Like, I never know what the kid is going to do.
Yeah.
So even like at nighttime, I wait until my eldest gets home from work. He's a senior. He's graduating this year. But I wait until he gets home from his job so that he can watch Jeremiah, so that I can take a shower finally, if Jeremiah is awake still.
Wow. And okay, I would love to talk about his brothers. We just today released an episode about the siblings, right? So I'm like thinking about it more. But like you mentioned that they don't resent you or anything like that. Like, can you tell me more about like their relationship with Jeremiah?
Sure. My boys, as medical brothers, I like to call them that. I do believe they have a different level of compassion as well as maturity regarding situation. They may not show it to me, but I do believe that it affects them, of course, emotionally and individually, because there's going to be things that mom can't do or that they can't do. They have watched me administer CPR. They have broken down crying when Jeremiah's blue. They've had to help maybe like run me the oxygen or get the backup trach or, you know, things that sometimes it's unfair for them to have to be able to react at such a moment.
Yeah.
But they are awesome with Jeremiah. They laugh at him a lot because Jeremiah has such a personality. Jeremiah's always like rolling his eyes or, you know, when it comes down to schoolwork, if he's not at his table, he does not want to do it. So they enjoy watching him do little things like fall out. Jeremiah doesn't like to brush his teeth every day. So whenever you hold up the toothbrush, he falls out. So they enjoy simpler moments like that. Is it tough on them? Yeah, because sometimes my kids may not even mention different things to me or invite me to certain things because of them thinking about their brother. I don't ever want them to be embarrassed of their brother. Never. But I do believe that mentally and emotionally sometimes it restricts them from being as free as other kids their age, because they know that they can't go everywhere and do everything. Like, we can't go to an amusement park because I can't watch them carefully and do rides with them because I have to look after Jeremiah. I don't do big crowds either because of germs especially, but I'm trying to get myself a little bit more. One of the things about life is that you can't be scared all the time. You can be cautious and careful instead of fearful. So I just learn, even when it comes down to going to their sporting events, I'll find like a separate corner and stand in it instead of going in the stands. Or for my son's baseball games, sometimes I pull the car up as close as I can to the fence so that I can see if Jeremiah's having a rough time, or depending on the weather, I might stay in my car, but I can see. So mommy's still there. Like, I'll blow the horn or something just to let them know that I'm there. So yeah, they have an amazing relationship with them. They help adapt different games and activities. We do family time where we'll find different games and just include Jeremiah. We do Uno, we do bingo, we do like the little Jenga tower, we do bowling. Anything you can think about, we do, and we just adapt it for Jeremiah.
I love that so much. It's so tricky as the parent because you're like, there is like the burden, not that the disabled child is a burden, right? I never would ever want to insinuate that, but just like the burden of caregiving or the burden of like medical trauma, it affects the whole family. And so I think as like the parent and as the mom, like it's so hard to see that weigh down on the siblings as well. But I feel like there's no way to truly protect them from that. And I think that's one of the hardest things.
It is. I want to say it's unfair. It's unfair because I personally know I could do so much more for my boys, but then it's fair in that the experience is one of a lifetime and it'll help them grow as a whole being and help them perhaps in their own future journey. So it'll give them a different perspective on life.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely a package deal. You kind of see like the growing experiences are often painful and uncomfortable, but there still is some of that growth that happens, or like growing up. I'm sure they experienced more life than a lot of their friends in this way, you know? So I think there is that trade-off, I guess.
Yeah, and you get proud of them because you see the way that they react or the way that they help out. Yeah. Perfect example. My eldest had COVID last week. So it was break, but we couldn't do anything because I had to make sure that everybody was okay and that we don't get sick, especially Jeremiah. And my eldest, he's so used to holding the door open for me, or when I come home from therapy, I usually have like five different machines and bags and chair plus his ventilator on my back, and just a lot to carry, multiple trips. And my eldest is usually the one who's home first. So he runs outside and help me. So after his days of isolation, he's like, Mom, can I please help you? Because it's just routine for him. Or if I'm exhausted and I fall asleep before Jeremiah's overnight feed starts at 10 p.m., by the time my eldest comes home a little bit after 10, if he realizes that I fell asleep before starting it, he'll add the milk and he'll start his brother's feed. Or he'll add more milk to it in the middle of the night if I'm just exhausted. So I am so proud of those moments. Like, I remember when Jeremiah had the flu and we had to get rushed in the middle of the night to the hospital. I asked my eldest to pack Jeremiah's bag. When I sent him instructions, I only sent him stuff for Jeremiah. And it was the sweetest thing ever to open up the bag and saw that my kid packed stuff for me. Like, I sent him instructions and said, hey, you know, pack X, Y, Z, and he knows what everything's called. But then to open up the bag and realize that he found my deodorant, my toothpaste, underwear, shower cap, little things like that, just, it's like, wow. You know, I was such a proud mom because he remembered me. He remembered me when I didn't even remember myself.
Ugh, that is like the sweetest thing. And I'm thinking too, while you're sharing this about your boys and specifically about your eldest, just because that's what you were just talking about, like, I'm sure that if I had an interview with him and I asked him how he feels about you, he would just gush. I mean, you can just feel how much he respects and loves you. That's such a tender thing. It's interesting because, like, we watch the non-disabled siblings and we see, like, the ways that our other child's disabilities affect them. But they also watch us, right? And they see the ways that it affects us. And so I think that's just such a sweet moment to have with him.
Yes, I agree.
Well, okay, Anissa, I'm so grateful for this conversation. It's been so wonderful to just hear about your family and about the ways that you guys have all, you know, reacted and navigated this. I would love to wrap up with advice that you would like to give to people listening right now who feel more in the darker mindset or the darker place that they may be just discouraged from, you know, so much care that's needed and so much is asked of them and things like that. Like, what advice would you like to leave with them?
Just before I give the advice, I did want to mention too, I know I mentioned a lot about Jaden, but even my other two, Jamari and Josiah, we take turns at night prepping Jeremiah's trick stuff. So one person will make up the bed for him. Another person will bring me all the bath stuff. Another person will help with trick stuff. So it's a team effort.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm just proud to be their mom.
You've got to be so proud. Yeah, it's so amazing.
If I had to give advice to someone who is in that dark place, when you think about a dark place, you think about a cloud outside in the middle of a storm, and the cloud seems to overshadow your entire life. A cloud overshadows your world, sometimes sending into pitch darkness, even if it's supposed to technically be daytime. Mm-hmm. I would say that one of the good things about time is that it's not going to be like this forever. Clouds pass. They don't just stay there forever. Even if the storm may seem as if it's long, I would say to just find a silver lining somehow. Even if it's a tiny one, a tiny one matters too. I would say to be a little bit more intentional in trying to find that silver lining. Whether it is the fact that you will become an expert and advocate for others as well as your child, or just the fact that as a human being, you will evolve as well into an entirely different person as you face this journey. So don't let the cloud pretty much kill your life, because at the end of the day, you still have life. One of the most scariest things is hearing that your child or loved one is going to die, but we're all going to die one day. We're literally all terminal. We just don't know when. So having someone tell us when is the emotional aspect of it. So we just have to get out of the emotional aspect and just live. Like, take it one moment at a time, find that silver lining, and live.
Oh, I love that so much. I love the symbolism that you bring there because I can just totally picture it, and that really resonates with me. Thank you so much, Anissa. This was so lovely to chat with you, and I loved hearing all of Jeremiah's little sounds, and he's so sweet. So thank you so much for taking the time and emotional bandwidth to chat with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and of course, for your work as well, and for your family, because you're speaking out as well.
Thank you so much. You can connect with Anissa on social media and follow her YouTube channel by following the links in the show notes. You can also find links to follow us on social media as well. A big thank you to our guest Anissa, the Rare Life team member Alyssa, and to Functional Formularies, who provided the funding to make this episode. Join us next week for an episode with Amanda Griffith Atkins, a disability mom and licensed therapist, all about navigating separation and divorce from our medically complex child's other parent. This is a great listen if you've ever contemplated separation but felt a bit trapped because it seems impossible or terrifying or both, or if you're already in that boat and want perspective and solidarity. Don't miss it. See you then.